The weeks that followed were filled with meetings, back to back. A campaign coordination committee, co-chaired by Frank Miller and me, developed a game plan for attacking Al-Qaeda. A domestic preparedness committee, chaired by Deputy Attorney General Larry Thompson, pooled the department's efforts to identify and remedy vulnerabilities in the U.S. to further attack. The cabinet and their deputies had had their eyes opened. It was a time of jitters. There were clearly bogus reports of commando teams targeting the White House and nuclear bombs on Wall Street. But many of the people now reading such intelligence had never seen it before and could not tell the wheat from the chaff. Reagan National Airport remained closed, but because of concerns about aircraft possibly headed toward the White House, we were on constant alert. Throughout it all, we thought of the dead, of the horror. Those of us who had stayed in the White House that day now knew why the United flight had crashed in Pennsylvania, that heroic passengers had fought and died, and probably saved our lives in the process. But we tried to stay unemotional, to stay focused on the work that had to be done, the work that kept us in the White House 18 hours a day and more, every day since 9/11. We were told that parts of my FBI friend, John O'Neill, had been found in the rubble in New York, and that there would be a memorial service in his hometown of Atlantic City. I told Condi Rice we would be taking a half day off. Lisa, Roger, and Bev Rountree joined me, and we drove to New Jersey. As the mass ended and John's coffin rolled by, the bagpipes played, and finally, I wept from my gut. There was so much to grieve about. How did all this happen? Why couldn't we stop it? How do we prevent it from happening again and rid the world of the horror? Someday, I would find the time to think through it all and answer those questions. Now is that time.